A giant happy new year to all of you, and a giant thank you to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, proud sponsors of the Ira Kaufman Podcast, the wildly popular Ira Kaufman Podcast, which continues to be ranked on the top charts of Google Play podcasts on all platforms, all subjects. Amazing 3-month run for Ira. And again, a little different start to the podcast. Just really wanted to give a more heartfelt thank you to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, for their longtime support. You can find them at edmorsecadillactampa.com and edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. You've heard of so many great offers that we've presented here on the podcast. The new ones for this year are going to be rolling out very soon. You'll probably hear them later on the week in this podcast, also at joebucksfan.com. But head right now to edmorsecadillactampa.com, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com, or get out to the dealerships, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, very easy, just west of 275 on Fletcher, and right there in Brandon on Causeway Boulevard, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. You're going to get the benefit of great service, family-owned dealership, more than 70 years of Ed Morse dealers across Florida. We're very proud to join forces with them for the Ira Kaufman Podcast, and we thank how great a job they've done taking care of our listeners who have been their customers, and it's just great to see. It's great to have that relationship. So here's Ira, and have a good new year. Happy New Year on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, featuring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz. Lee DeCamper's here. We're joebucksfan.com. And, of course, he's not late. He's right on time, as always, Mr. Ira Kaufman. Ira, happy New Year.
Thank you, my friend. I wish a happy and healthy 2018 for all listeners from Guam to Jerusalem and all points in between, gentlemen. Maybe Sydney, Australia. A little shout-out to Melbourne. It's going to be a great year as far as the Bucks are concerned, Lee. It's got to be better.
And speaking of being better, happy new year to you as well, Ira. If I recall correctly, 2017 wasn't your finest.
Well, 2016 was a bad year.
Yeah, it was an ugly year. But I was just thinking 2017. But 2017, if I recall correctly, you're still suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder from riding with Isbitz in Arizona. Dante's growing.
I'm almost over that. I'm almost over that.
Okay. Yeah. Dante's growing old and weaker and sicker.
His eyes are going.
You had your beach chair, Steve, at St. Pete Beach, and the police there have.
That's outstanding memory,
man. They have yet to resolve the crime.
They found two of my old columns wafting up on the shores over there.
And to sum it all up, the Swaggy Becker's still in Tampa Bay. So it's not been a great 2017 for
Ireland. You know what? I've been thinking about this, Steve. You know, what did I come up with in 2017? Well, the first thing I came up with was that famous quote from a Redskin official. Good player doesn't like to practice. Now, I dare say, after watching Baker for 3 months, I'm not even sure the first part is right. He was an average player who didn't like to practice.
At best.
So I think I turned our listeners and our readers onto that very, very early. Very, very early. And what did I say 6 weeks ago, gentlemen? I believe the credibility of the John Gruden rumors that he's going back to an NFL sidelines are a lot stronger this year and a lot more legitimate. Lo and behold, I think within a week, we're going to have Gruden introduced in front of the Oakland media as the new coach of the Raiders. I don't think they would have fired Del Rio unless they felt they had Gruden wrapped up. Now, with Gruden, you never know.
I was going to say they might pull up Blazers and Parcells.
As far as the Bucks are concerned, Dave, we just had our last session with Dirk Cutter. The players are surprisingly buoyant and upbeat going into 2018.
Ira, it's New Year's Day. Of course, they just finished their jobs. They just got paid for week 17. They don't have to go to work tomorrow.
They got the new crocker pots from Jameis Winston.
Half of them will be in the Dominican smoking all kinds of things next week. I mean, come on.
A 3-month vacation.
Of course they're fired up.
All right, got Dirk Cutter to say he reads everything or he reads nothing. My thing is that he reads everything.
All right, before we go back to the game, because the game has just happened, it's important. Some interesting things happened there. You know, Dirk Cutter did speak, and he said, you know, I heard this thing from somewhere. I just heard a great thing, either read everything in the newspaper or read nothing kind of thing. Keep track of the media.
I think we know where he is.
And I said to him, from A.J. Hawk, he's like, I learned that from A.J. Hawk. That's a whole nother story.
We heard it last week on it. I did it too, NFL radio.
It was just kind of funny because I think his the fact that I said that, it just freaked him out a little bit.
You heard that interview?
He said, what? All right, Sage, Buccaneers beat the Saints. They shocked the world. They beat a Saints team.
Highly motivated Saints team.
That is not only the NFC South champion. They were highly motivated. Nobody was mailing it in. And the Bucs, frankly, did a lot like what they played against Carolina. similar game, except they won this time. What is your take on that victory? What do you make of that?
Lee, I think to suggest that they stood toe-to-toe with the Saints, I think does the Bucs a disservice. I thought they outplayed the Panthers badly a week ago, and I thought they outplayed the Saints to a large degree on Sunday. Take away that Kamara kickoff, in which he was untouched. How can you go 106 yards and have nobody near you, Lee? That can't happen. But anyway, up and down the field, 13 for 18 on third down. I made a point in my column on Sunday, Lee, that the Buck offense in the last 6 or 7 weeks was pretty darn good.
It was.
Pretty darn good. Now, look, I said in mid-November, Dirk Koetter has 6 weeks left to see whether the Bucks are buying what he's selling. That's what I said. He may not have liked it at the time, but it turns out that the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Now, this is still a 5-11 football team with a lot of holes. But for one Sunday afternoon, which turned out to be a nice day, you know, while the rest of the nation is shivering, I thought the Bucks kicked the Saints in the ass for most of the day.
Interesting.
I thought the defense played well. The Saints have a hell of an offense.
Yeah, not well enough as usual, but okay, yeah, I'm not dismissing that.
They scored 24 points, but 7 are on the kickoff return. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to say.
And they still couldn't stop the Saints in the fourth quarter, but
it's the Saints.
It's the Saints. It's the Saints, but it's a pattern, an ugly pattern.
And Winston, as Steve is going to tell us, on a ball that should have went short to the left sidelines, decides to go for the whole enchilada. Who knows what would have happened if Godwin is tackled at the 2-yard line, the Bucs lose the game. Right?
Or God forbid if that was picked.
Bucs lose the game. So, you know what? It shows all sides of Winston right there on
the
one play.
That was a Winston game. Yeah.
It was a Winston game. And Steve, the confidence that number 3's got in himself and the confidence he's got in Godwin. Look, you look for silver linings in a 5-11 season. Godwin's very high on that list.
Yeah.
Very high on that list. Koetter thinks he reminds him of Vincent Jackson. I don't know about that. I don't know if the guy's going to average 17 yards a catch for his. But, boy, Godwin's impressively.
I'm not going to speak for Koetter. I'm going to guess here that it's his versatility that he likes with him. Reason why he compares him to Vincent Jackson. I remember Koetter at one point saying he could put Vincent Jackson at the slot, at one. You name it, the W, whatever, that he could use Vincent Jackson all over the field. I'm sensing that's the same way with Godwin. The silver lining about this game, it may have goofed up their draft, but I can't remember who I heard this from last night. It was some NFL observer, analyst, I don't know if it was NFL radio.
Was it Tom Corrin?
No, it was not Corrin.
All right, just
but
asking.
It was a former player, and he said, yeah, your season stinks. Yeah, that's empty wins, so to speak. He said, but you know what? You come away with a win like that, a 95-yard drive to win the game, with the way you did it, he goes, lifting the weights are easier in the offseason. Doing your drills are a little easier in the offseason. And he thought that that could be a springboard to something.
Signing Brent Grimes, is he maybe a little easier or some of these other guys?
That's why you're the realist of this group over here.
I mean, you got to give some guys some hope. And forgetting about the reality, if the players believe, you know, that maybe helps Grimes come back. Because if he doesn't come back, oh boy.
We haven't heard one word from Miko or Grimes to suggest that he wasn't happy in his year in Tampa.
No,
and
nothing.
That he doesn't like this group of guys that he's fighting with.
No, but he's clearly looking for money on this contract, and I don't blame him. The reason suggests this is his last contract.
Is there any reason the Bucs should be outbid on Brent Grimes if it comes down to money, Steven? Any reason?
No, of course not. Look, teams spend a lot of money every year on guys who don't deserve the money. The Bucs
Swaggy.
Bucs have a history of that. Vincent Jackson, we just brought him up. He earned
Doug Martin.
$10 million last year.
Yeah, Doug Martin, $7
Doug
million.
Martin this year. They kept his $7 million contract, which was, you know, really like $5.8 million. But still, there are plenty of guys who get paid who don't deserve it. Grimes deserves it. So show him the money. So what if you have to pay him an extra $1.2 million than market value? Come on.
Is he eligible to be franchised?
Every player is eligible to be franchised if they're unrestricted free agent.
Okay.
You know,
there's
no way the Bucs have any kind of comfort level at cornerback without Brent Grimes.
That's a great point.
Not a chance in the world.
Great point by Lee there, possibly franchising Grimes. You know what? They can slap that tag on him if they have to, and I'd be all in favor of that. I'd be in favor of that.
And I think he would too, because the amount of money he'd get would be crazy.
Well, I think the top of the market for free agent corners is, I want to say, like $10, $11 million, because it came way down. I got to double check that, but it came way down after Revis hit the $16 million and then lost his deal, And then Tlaib re-signed for we'll check on that, but that's a great point.
Steve, back to the game for a second. We talked about Godwin. Another impressive effort for Peyton Barber. Gentlemen, another good one. Now we asked Cutter on Monday, could Barber be the lead dog in the rushing attack in 2018? He didn't say he couldn't. I talked to a lot of players, including a couple offensive linemen like Marpet and Smith, about Barber. They love this guy. They absolutely love the guy. He doesn't dance. There's no dancing going on.
Yeah.
And he squeezes every yard that's there. He falls forward, and he's physical. Now, does he have to work on his pass blocking? Yeah. Koufax couldn't hit. You know. Now I'm not comparing this guy to Koufax. You know,
Koufax couldn't hit.
But you know,
I gotta remember
the guy looks like to me he could be as good as Ernest Graham. And they made a couple. They won a couple of division titles with Ernest Graham.
Yeah. I got to remember that line. Koufax couldn't hit.
So, and neither can you, by the way, Isbit.
Well, I did swing and miss on the cornerbacks' contracts. Top five are all making like $14 million a year. So it would probably cost.
That's high cotton.
That's high cotton.
But the Bucs are in no bargaining position.
But still, that's correct. But that's for another day.
Yeah, Grimes has them over by the barrel.
Somebody else wants Brent Grimes out there if the Bucs don't.
Dirk Cutter said today, we want Brent Grimes back.
Yes,
he said we made the sales pitch. And Grimes, who I talked to in the locker room, was very upbeat, saying he really likes the team, likes living in Tampa. And he said, I feel great. And he's made no hints that he wants out or he was a very jovial kind of guy.
Hold on, Steve. Let me put our man on the spot here.
Uh-oh.
Good game for Winston or bad game for Winston, Lee?
He won. So it's got to be a good game. I understand where you're going with the interceptions and everything, or the turnovers. I should say. It's either fumbles or picks with Jameis. One of the two. He won the game. 95-yard drive, that's good. Yeah, there are warts in his game, no question. But, you know, Brett Favre had warts. Ben Roethlisberger had warts. It's all about wins.
Are some of these warts, Steve, something that the Bucs are going to have to live with going forward? Just like, he's going to throw some picks. He's going to fumble some. You do the best you can to minimize it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's never going to be Drew Brees. He's not built that way. He's going to be more Roethlisberger than Drew Brees. He's going to take some chances. He's not going to be a 70% passer.
Although he has been the last few weeks.
Steve, is this just something you got to live with going forward and you hope the guy's a winner and you think he's a winner?
You hope the guy's a winner. He's got to win the games. I mean, look, if he wins football games, he'll be here. If he doesn't win football games, he won't continue to be here. They're not going to stand by a quarterback. No team anywhere in the NFL, if you really look at it, nobody stands by a quarterback who keeps losing, no matter who his teammates are.
In
modern football, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, so. I was doing some research the other day. Just a couple names popped in my head that I thought didn't have good starts to their careers. One guy's in the Hall. Another guy, I'll throw his name out there. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Good quarterback. I don't think Jim Hart. Dan Fouts, I think, had six losing seasons before Coryell got there and turned his career around. Hart, I want to say, had two wins, and they weren't playoff years. Like two out of his first five or two out of his first six were, you know, so he was like 4-6 as far as winning seasons, that is, until Coryell, oddly enough, the same coach, Coryell turned him around.
Steve, were you surprised Cutter was fairly effusive in his praise for the Buck offensive line, calling them in the upper half of the league? That surprised you at all?
You know, I asked him the question. I served him up, I guess you'd call it a softball. I said, give me a couple of highlights on the offensive line this year.
And you were looking for a couple of names, right?
Yeah, something to write about.
He coughed up one name.
Coughed up some names. So he went right to Donovan Smith.
Right to Donovan Smith.
Talked about his durability and how well he's played and how he battled through a lot of injuries. Something I haven't written about yet for Joe Bucs fan. I talked to Donovan Smith after the game specifically about his durability.
And I talked to him today.
Specifically about the durability. And
you know what? There's something to be said for durability for a left tackle.
Well,
there is.
Lee and I have maintained, and look, Dirk Cutter joked today about, hey, you know, these rumors, and a lot of people think he sucks, and the evaluation.
Shouldn't be in football, I think was the words.
Yeah, shouldn't be in football.
That's right.
The evaluation, people out there, of course, that's the Pro Football Focus. That's the foolish media who believes Pro Football Focus is anything more than voodoo.
Chris Landry was belittling Smith on Dumick's show a month or two ago, calling him a scrub.
And what was? Have you seen Landry's resume?
Yes. You may continue.
So Cutter went right to that card, and that's really the only player that he mentioned other than
Jamal Dotson. He called him a pretty darn good football player.
Yeah. He was very, very pro Donovan Smith.
And then he went to Dotson.
He went to Dotson, saying Dotson was having his best year and playing a little hurt before he got hurt. And
didn't mention Marpet.
didn't mention really anybody else at all. So I don't know what we can read into that, but I mean, he's got to be positive on his offensive line when the Bucs were number four in the league in passing. So they're certainly pass blocking, number nine overall. They're doing some things. When Doug Martin's not in there, they're running the ball.
And they had a 95-yard drive to win a game with three starters out.
Yeah.
Most offensive lines, that would be a total train wreck. You lose three starters.
And the Saints' defense is pretty good this year.
Yeah. I think with offensive lines, see, we're in an NFL crisis. We're in a crisis with offensive lines in the NFL. Like Cutter himself said, he goes, I watch tape of other teams. He goes, I really see some bad offensive lines.
Yeah.
We are in a crisis mode in the NFL, and people have the reasonable people that claim the Bucs have horrible offensive
lines. This is not the Giants.
They're basing the offensive lines on 10 years ago. It's completely different now. And so, yeah, if you're going to base the Bucs on the Giants or whomever 10 years ago, yeah, I guess you could say
no, I meant the Giants now, the disgraceful Giants.
Oh, they are disgraceful. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, and that's another thing. Donovan Smith is durable. He's only missed one half of football in 3 years. He takes on, like Cutter said, the best pass rushers in the game. And the Bucs should get rid of him and draft a guy who could easily turn out to be Ereck Flowers. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a discussion with a heated discussion with a Bucs official yesterday after the game. A little fun, you know. And, look, Donovan Smith's at least average in this league, at least. And that's okay. You're not going to.
The Chiefs drafted the Fisher kid number one overall. I think Donovan Smith's better than him.
Wow.
And he's starting for a playoff team.
Because Lee mentioned, Cutter said, I watch tape of other offensive lines in my line of work, and there's a lot of bad ones out there.
Seattle has a horrible offensive line. They've been a perennial playoff team until this year, and they were still on the cusp.
But, Sage, let me take you back to Jameis. And you know, we said that in the modern NFL, actually, I looked up Dan Fouts, four losing seasons, and then he was hurt in his fifth year, and then he went on his good run. But you know what? Four losing seasons in the NFL now, that's got to be your top ceiling, or that's a lifetime. So Jameis has to find a way to win. They're not going to pay him, the Glazers, I don't think. They're going to open the vault for a guy who with a losing record and who can't win. So they have to find a way.
I'm going to be consistently on this topic, and I'm going to say,
Uber,
barring a decision on the Uber case that shows that Winston is guilty and that he lied, barring that, and I don't think that's going to happen, barring that.
Yeah, you have good sources.
I don't think the Glazers have lost any faith in Jameis Winston going forward. And I don't think they're pinning the 5-11 record on Jameis Winston. First of all, Winston got hurt.
Yes.
Two, you can't blame him that they got no pass rush. You can't blame him that the running game sucked for most of the season. Yes, he's prone to a turnover. And you know how Cutter is with turnovers.
Most coaches are.
In the grand scheme of things, guys, turnovers didn't hurt the Bucs this season. They were about average. They were about even.
Yeah, I make this.
It was not an overarching issue for the 2017
massive
Bucs.
Issue.
No issue.
Massive.
Entering last night's game, Sunday night's game, in Jameis' last six starts, four times he either gave him the lead or tied the game in the fourth quarter. Isn't that what you want your franchise quarterback to do? Put your team in position to win?
I'm going to stick with what, and a lot of people have said this. I didn't author this line, and you might have even said it, Lee, but among the Bucs' concerns and issues, you know, that are seriously affecting this franchise success, Winston's not in the top five.
No, not even close.
He's just not. And, Steve, you're about to tell me that he's a turnover machine, and you got serious questions about number three, and I'll let you have the floor.
No, I'm not. No, listen, let me make myself clear. I like Jameis Winston, the football player. There is no reason in the world for the organization to give up on him now for with the information we have right now. The Uber thing, maybe that changes the game. Good young quarterback, but he's nowhere close to being beyond average when you look at every quarterback in this league. We could pretend otherwise, but he is not beyond average when you look at all the other quarterbacks. And you look at the turnovers, turnovers cost them in a lot of these games. They were critical mistakes that shouldn't have happened. The kind in Green Bay, you can't do that. You just handed the team a touchdown. Julius Peppers, we saw that in the early Carolina game, which was a killer. We saw that in Carolina the second time.
What about all the plays he makes?
You're saying turnovers were not a major factor. They were. I'm not talking about the good plays overcoming them. If he can cut those, let's put it this way. If Jameis cuts those mistakes in half, this team probably wins three more games this year.
Yes.
And it goes well going forward. So he's got to figure that out. And through 3 years, nobody has got him to figure it out. And that's what has to change. Because to me, the number one issue with Jameis, turnovers.
Can't take his aggressiveness out of the equation in the bargain.
You can't. I think that's his DNA that was so attractive to light. You want a guy like that. I think what you said earlier, I think is apt, that he's going to have turnovers. You're just going to live with it. But what Steve is saying is equally accurate in that if he can limit those turnovers, you're talking probably 3 wins. Right now, or up until the last couple of games, until last night, the Bucs just weren't a good enough team to overcome his mistakes, meaning Jameis can overcome them and move the ball. They don't have the defense to stop anybody. Last night was different. Part of it was Jameis had time to mount a drive, where he didn't have in previous games. But I think both of you guys are right. Jameis is going to have turnovers. That's just him. But like Steve said, if you can limit those turnovers, don't do chaotically ignorant turnovers like hand the ball off to a defensive end in Green Bay.
You don't want to turn him into Alex Smith.
You don't want him to be a check down Charlie. And a lot of people screaming about Dirk Cutter and his play calls, and Steve and I don't buy into that because we don't know the tendencies of the defense. We're not seeing that. So like I told someone on Twitter, if you could show me the tendencies of the defense, why Cutter's play calls were a mistake, I'll start buying into that. Until then, it's just rhetoric. It's video game nonsense. However, clearly the Bucs need to score points. They've moved the ball. I told Alex Marvez this, Monday Night Football, Atlanta. Bucs have no problem moving between the 20s. It's touchdowns is the issue. I think we talked about field goal kickers earlier. You know, Cutter's banking on field goals from rotten kickers. Yes, the play that Jameis...
That's a bad mentality.
That's a dangerous mentality because you're banking on someone who is inept to win you games. Jameis' touchdown to win the game, that was the wrong... Cutter wanted a different play, and Jameis ignored it. And obviously we heard stories about how the coaching staff on the sideline completely went mental when they saw Jameis put that ball in the air. Like, oh my God. I think Cutter should take a little bit of Jameis' aggressiveness. When he gets inside the 30, when the Bucs get inside the 30, the opponent's 30, I think Cutter needs to be, instead of like, okay, the odds tell me to go with a kicker, don't go with the odds.
Be aggressive. Steve, maybe you can have that mentality a little bit if you got a heck of a defense. If you got a heck of a defense.
And a heck of a kicker.
You know, maybe Dungy could have that mentality in 2000 and, 1999, when the other teams weren't scoring. Now, one more thing about Winston's. And I didn't get to ask Cutter this. I ran out of time because Bucs PR was in a hurry to cut off that press conference.
Yeah, what was with that?
I don't get that. It's the last time you're talking to Cutter.
They want to watch football, too.
You know, if you guys are listening over there, we didn't need that two more questions.
They want to watch football, too.
You know, when Cutter was done, Cutter was going to say he's finished. But till then, and I didn't get to this point.
I mean, last year was when, at that time, the end of the wrap-up was when he told Roy Cummings to shut up, wasn't it? We missed that.
Well,
we almost got there.
We got to have that kind of comic relief. Now, here's a point I didn't get to. On Cutter's offense, and I think it's very legitimate because it goes beyond this year. I think it was a big problem last year. Now you got 2 years. His time as a head coach, one of the characteristics of it, which is a little depressing, is they're very slow starters on offense.
Bad pattern.
They're slow. I looked at the scoring by quarters, and wait till the final stats come out. They scored like 140 points in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
They scored like 60 in the first quarter. Now, what does that tell you? First thing it could tell you is some of those blowouts, you know, like Minnesota, Arizona, cheap points, cheap yards in the fourth quarter. Yeah. That's number one. But number two, how much of those slow starts are on Winston's shoulders? Steve, some people think he gets too hepped up, you know, hyped up.
Yes.
And it's affecting him. Steve, could that be a factor?
How about hemped up? Hemped up.
Hemped up. There you go, man.
It's on.
Slow starts are a
and
problem.
And no, I'm not insinuating Jameis does anything illegal. I'm just being sarcastic.
Steve, some of the better teams, they grab you by the throat right from the start. This team doesn't do that.
It's on Cutter and Jameis, really, because it's not a coincidence. I mean, they averaged 9 points a game in the first half this year.
9 points.
So that means you're playing from behind a lot. And we all know, every coach knows, everybody who's played football knows, the game is different when you're playing with a lead.
Didn't they score a touchdown on the opening drive only twice this year?
Green Bay was one. Was last night?
And in Carolina, I think they – no.
Okay. Green Bay.
Whatever it is, it's not nearly enough.
Here's a research project for you, Ira, a future column. What did Cutter's offenses do in the first quarter at Atlanta at Jacksonville?
I'll check it out.
I'm just curious if there was a pattern or not.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, Buccaneers scored a touchdown this week on their opening drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought I read that it was only
two games. It was two games this year.
Two out of 16 games, Lee.
That's not good.
The bigger thing, Pat Kerwin, actually, who was a Jets personnel chief, was a Bucs scout. People know him from CBS, SiriusXM NFL Radio. Pat Kerwin did an analysis about 4 years ago on opening drive scoring. Very interesting. The Buccaneers, I think this year they averaged about 1.6 points or something, 1.4. Very low, easily in the bottom third, and that's a big part of your year.
Who fared well on that regard?
I was
like
only
New England, maybe.
I only looked at his study from a handful of years ago, but you want to be at 3 points average on that opening drive. Yeah. Bucks were nowhere close to that.
Yeah.
And that's an issue. That's a Cutter-Jameis thing combined. Yeah. I see it, but
yeah,
who knows?
Both. Yeah.
And you know, here's another factor, guys. I mean, the ramifications are strong of slow starts. For example, when you fall behind by two touchdowns, which this team did, especially on the road, it screws up your offensive balance.
Very much so.
There's a whole series of things that go along with the slow starts.
And what did Cutter just say today?
Balance is the key.
Yeah, it's hard to defend a balanced offense.
That's exactly what he said.
All right, Sage.
And that's part of the reason the offense looks so much better, because Barber was running a lot better than anybody else was.
Thank you very much. And, Steve, how many years have we been beating a drum about that?
About Doug Martin? Are we talking about Doug Martin? I don't know what to say. Everybody who listens to this podcast, they know. Here's the thing.
After the opening, Barber got three carries in the next six games after the opening game, right? And he had a good opening game against Chicago. Nobody can explain that.
Well, I'll go back to the Chiefs game. He had limited touches, but he got yards. And I'm like, give this guy some more chances.
We're not trying to say this guy's Barry Sanders.
Yeah, and when I'm saying Chiefs game, I'm talking 2016 here.
Yeah, yeah. Look, but he gets you what's there, Steve.
Another season in the books, Doug Martin with
let's hear the numbers, Steve.
His fantastic three carries for negative 3 yards on Sunday. He finished 2.9 yards per carry.
Isn't that exactly what he had last year?
That's exactly what he had last year. Very predictable result. I don't blame Doug Martin. He is who he is at this point.
Yeah,
he sucks.
Gave him the job. They gave him the money. What's he going to do? Say, no, don't give me the ball?
So he tried his best, and he delivered what he did last year when he tried his best. So, but you know what? Another year where Peyton Barber averaged 3.9. Last year, Quiz Rogers averaged 4.1, I think it was. Quiz Rogers himself this year, a full yard ahead of Doug Martin. And Charles Sims, I think, was 4.7 yards a carry.
Don't tell that to Lee. Don't say that.
4.7 yards a carry when they bothered to hand him off the ball.
You think there's no chance Sims comes back on this team?
I think that he does come back.
I think Cutter likes him.
I think Sims Cutter, is back.
Well, that's certainly a feather in his cap. I haven't checked in 2 or 3 weeks, but the last time I checked, it was 2 weeks ago. Take a guess who led this team in yak.
You said Humphreys. That's very surprising.
2 weeks ago, it was Mr. Sims by a thread over Humphreys. The top two players on the team for yak, or Sims, and this is 2 weeks ago, was Sims and Humphreys. And you want to talk about what's wrong with the offense? When you have a running back and a backup receiver who's leading your team in yak, when you had DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, there's your issue.
You know, guys, you were there when I asked Cutter specifically about DeSean Jackson and not maximizing his effectiveness in 2017. Mm-hmm. Cutter admitted as such, said it wasn't Jackson's fault, talked about they couldn't get him the ball deep even though he was open. One other thing that Cutter didn't say, guys, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but there's other ways to get the ball to DeSean Jackson in a little bit of space.
Yes.
On time.
Yes.
Like a couple of slants, which he almost broke this year. Steve, that was a big problem. Where were the slants to the shallow slants to DeSean Jackson?
Thank you
Steve,
very much.
Where
get him
were
in space.
They?
Get him in space and let his wheels take over. Yes.
The DeSean Jackson thing is very interesting. And when you look at this last game and you see the rise of Chris Godwin and you see that everybody in the organization loves Godwin. Everybody respects his work ethic. You were there today, I believe, Ira. We were talking to Ryan Fitzpatrick, who said, Godwin,
one of the top rookies
I've been around a lot of rookies, and the way he approaches the game and the way he is, one of the best. Now, it's a guy who's played 15 years who doesn't speak in grandiose bloviating. So let's be realistic
here.
He's
very insightful, Fitzpatrick.
I'm trying to be insightful myself, Sage. And you know what?
The word is try.
If you have Godwin and you see he's the real deal, and Mike Evans obviously is your number one, you know, you have a brewing problem. If you bring back DeSean Jackson, who's going to have a quick frustration trigger if he's not where he wants to
give
be.
Give him his credit. He stayed silent.
Very professional.
He stayed silent, but he stayed frustrated. It was visible. Rightfully so, though, in many ways. Winston thrown behind him, then not getting involved, the team losing, whatever. But he was very professional. But still, he's got his A game. Cutter talked about how he hasn't lost even a half a step today. If Godwin's the better player, if you determine that and you put him in ahead of DeSean Jackson, you got a crisis on your team right away. And I don't
and
like.
You're saying so you could get something for Jackson.
I think if you really evaluate, and I'm not evaluating Chris Godwin right here on the podcast, but if you really think he's a number two receiver and legit and the guy, you got a brewing crisis unless you're going to, you know, and then you got
to. It's interesting. It's Lee, tough. It's interesting. Two factors. One, you didn't know how good Godwin was when you drafted him. You thought he was good. Mm-hmm. Now you know.
Right.
He's the real deal. So to that point, Steve's right on it. Number two, could you get something for Jackson if you deal him? Could you get a second round pick? Could you get a third round pick? It's something to think about. Yeah. But I'll say this. Godwin's not a burner. He looks like a really good player.
Yeah.
But he's not a burner. And when Cutter said after last year, basically, we don't have enough speed.
Mm-hmm.
That still could be the case. If you get rid of Jackson.
You're correct, but if you're not being able to utilize Jackson's speed, then what's the point? Then what's the point?
Why would you think that Jameis Winston can hit DeSean Jackson deep? That's a big issue if that ends up the way you're thinking.
I guarantee you, in practice he can. Then again, that's practice. You don't have defenders. I think there's a variety of issues. Part of it was Jameis was hurt. He had that bum shoulder. I think that was part of it. You're talking about the drama that could develop if they use Godwin more than Jackson next year. This is something interesting. Mike Evans told me this after the game Sunday night, and I just went to Mike and just, hey, tell me about Godwin. What do you think about him? You see him every day in practice. And Evans was over the top glowing about Godwin. He goes, he's a number one receiver. I'm like, Mike, you're a number one receiver. He goes, yeah, I am. And then he started thinking. He goes, now don't you start something.
the only possible negative we ever heard, guys, in training camp on Godwin, and we talked about Godwin a lot, was a couple of times Cutter made it a point to say his stamina was a little suspect.
Yes, he wasn't used to the summer.
That's the only negative I've ever heard on Chris Godwin. And now I think that's probably eliminated. So they're all in on Godwin right now. And why wouldn't you be?
Ira, let me say this about the stamina comment. I believe, if I remember correctly, that only came about because we heard a thing on Hard Knocks. When he was like, hey, you're running out of gas, and that's just training camp.
Right,
otherwise,
yeah.
We don't hear that. A couple of points on this. I'm even going to channel one of your Hall of Fame buddies on this. Paul Domowicz out of Philadelphia.
The man who's making the case for the guy that's going up against John Lynch over there.
The Hall of Fame voter out of Philly. He was tweeted, so he answered some fan tweets and things like that. He put something out. He's kind of harsh with the fans a little bit.
He can be.
It was fun. He basically said, look, man. Carson Wentz, and who's their top receiver? I forgot his name again. The free agent.
Jeffries.
Yeah.
Alshon Jeffries.
He made the point to the fans, hey, look, the first half of the season, they were totally out of sync, off the same page, a nightmare. And he was telling to the fan that, hey, it takes time, the chemistry and whatever.
The timing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's some of that with Jackson, clearly, the timing and the game speed and all that other stuff. But
and then while they're trying to get that together, Winston bums out his shoulder.
But here's the thing, Ira. This year, Jackson caught 50 balls. He caught 56 last year. He caught 56% of the balls thrown his way. Last year, he caught 56 of the balls thrown his way.
You are very dangerous with statistics.
However, there's a big however.
Continue.
Last year, he missed one game. This year, he missed two games. The only difference was the yards per catch. He had four more yards per catch with the Redskins.
What about touchdowns?
Four touchdowns last year, three touchdowns this year. The year before in Washington, only four touchdowns. So the Bucs didn't get all they wanted out of him, but he's kind of doing what DeSean Jackson does.
The big difference, the big however, and Steve had a little however, the big however is his yak is way down this year, way down.
And he didn't get 40-yard catches.
Yeah.
That's his forte.
Yeah, usually his yak is what is – is spectacular about him, and his yak was way down. And for those listening, if you don't know what yak is, I'm not talking about throwing up on the field like the defense does. Yards after catch.
Steve, they didn't have the 40-plus yard receptions.
I just think if Jason Light wants to be bold in any possible way this year, in this early part of the offseason.
You bet on Godwin.
Bet on Godwin. The fans will get it. Bet on Godwin. get rid of Vincent Jackson for what you get. Maybe you can get
DeSean Jackson.
DeSean Jackson. Maybe you can get somebody's number three cornerback. Maybe. Somebody with some promise out there, whatever it is. You dump that salary and then go sign a good mid-range receiver. Like you know, 2 years ago, they didn't sign Sanu, and he's running wild. There's a lot of things he could do. If you want to be bold, Jackson, look, the Bucs are not a Super Bowl team next year. I'm sorry. Sorry, they're not
a Super Bowl team. Sorry, Bucs fans.
We live for them. We want them to make it, but it's not a Super Bowl team next year. DeSean Jackson, bet on Godwin. That's what I would do.
You know, and one thing we haven't even mentioned is Godwin's emergence. It's a huge feather for Jason Light.
Oh, sure. His draft this year right now looks spectacular. Obviously, O.J. Howard, that's a no-brainer. Beckwith, I think a combination of two things caught up with Beckwith. He played fantastic earlier in the year. I think a combination of the rookie wall and the league figured him out.
Now, not every fan's all in on O.J. Howard.
They're psychotic.
Some think that he was underutilized, Steve. Now, he did catch 6 touchdowns.
Ira, you've heard this saying, I'm sure, that it's hard for a rookie tight end to have success in the NFL. A couple of months ago, or maybe even before the season started, I wrote a story about that. And I looked at the top 10 tight ends currently in the NFL today and what they did as rookies. And I revisited that a couple weeks ago. Godwin, had he not been hurt, if you compare him to the top tight ends in the league
now. You mean Howard. Howard.
Howard, right. Howard. If you compare Howard's rookie stats to the rookie stats of the top 10 current tight ends, what they did as rookies, if he didn't get hurt, he's probably number two to Gronkowski.
And he had a heck of a tight end next to him in the room. Did they get 12 touchdowns out of the tight end position? That's pretty darn good, Steve.
Yeah, close. If it wasn't 12,
I think it was
six.
The people
six.
Say that Godwin was underutilized or psychotic. They're video game people.
Anyway, Lee was talking about Light's draft haul, and it looks impressive.
Light got 4 starters, and frankly, 4 starters who could actually start for other teams. These aren't garbage starters.
Technically 5 if you factor in Auclair, who they got as a free agent. They were going to draft him, but they didn't.
Take it easy on Auclair.
Frankly, Auclair's played horrible. I mean, he's with the penalties last week all over the place, and he gets blown up half the time. I'm sure he's a nice prospect. Awesome story, but, I mean, he's no player, and I think they know it. He's just a guy.
The Bucs are picking 7th, Steve, am I correct?
Bucs are picking 7th, but on the underutilized front, we said it before, they threw for the 4th most yards in the league. You can't see the number 4 team in passing.
Well, they also threw a lot of passes.
Total yards, you're behind Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady, and Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah,
Breeze was way down in yardage this year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, you can't say everybody's underutilized. You know, otherwise, you're throwing for 5,000-plus yards, and you got to be a little balanced. But let's take this back to one of the most important things of the day, Ira. And, of course, that would be Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. Go to their websites. If you didn't get it done last year, edmorescadillactampa.com.
They're balanced, and they have depth, Steve. That's where you go right there.
EdmorsCadillacBrandon.com and EdmorsCadillacTampa.com. As we heard their offers and their happy things we heard in the beginning of this podcast, if you hit fast forward to miss that, bad form, folks, bad form. Ira, one of the news bits of the day here at $1 was I asked Dirk Cutter to clarify this Mike Smith stuff. Because
I know less about the answer when he finished speaking than I did before you asked the question.
2 other media guys sort of danced around about Mike Smith, asked some questions, and Dirk's dancing with his answer saying, well, you know, thanks for the Glazers and bringing us all back, but you never
I'm
know.
Appreciative and this
you never know. I'm like, Dirk, to clarify, is Mike Smith the coordinator here, Todd Monken, are they back? And he basically said, yes, for now. Things change around the league. What do you make of that? Sage wisdom.
Well, I think there's 2 ways you can look at it, Lee, and I'll let you weigh in on this. 1, maybe Mike Smith can get a head coaching job. It could change. Monken might get an interview. You never know. The other way you can look at it is, with all these coaching changes, you don't know who's going to shake off a coaching staff, somebody else's coaching staff that might be very intriguing, you know, as your new defensive coordinator. You can look at it in a lot of ways, but I didn't get a definitive answer, and I was kind of – I think Buck fans want to get some kind of answer. Whether they like Smith or don't like him, they're still up in the air whether he's coming back.
Your first intuition, I think, is bullseye. He's praying that he gets hired as a head coaching job. That way he doesn't have to fire a friend. That's what I think, number one. Number two, very interesting point you had. You know, Jack Del Rio's out there, 34 guy, but he's close. I mean, Cutter quotes Jack Del Rio. Oh, I took it easy on the boys in training camp because I learned that from Jack Del Rio. Well, I could understand that if you learned that from Parcells or Bill Walsh or Belichick, but Jack Del Rio, come on. Marvin Lewis, as Steve has documented many times, him and Cutter go back to Idaho. They're tight.
Very tight.
And he's got a hell of a resume as a defensive coach. Both of your situations are correct, Ira, but I think the first one is the main one, that Dirk is crossing his fingers, rubbing the rosary beads, that Mike Smith, there's a lot of hit. We didn't see Arizona opening up. I really didn't see Detroit opening up, to be honest. They're open. Who knows what's going to happen after our podcast is recorded. But your podcast, I should say. But I think that's it. He's praying that someone hires Mike as a head coach, and that saves him the embarrassment of firing one
now,
of his
Steve,
friends.
I want to say something in fairness to Mike Smith, who I personally like.
Great guy.
But it shouldn't color our opinions. Can you blame Mike Smith for a terrible pass rush? Can you blame Mike Smith for not enough talent in the secondary beyond Brent Grimes? The linebackers are strong. Yes, they are. Even with Beckwith's play dropping off a little bit, that's a strong, strong unit.
Very much so. Bond is
one of the best in the league. One of the best in the league. So, Steve, how much of this is scheme? Mike Smith's fault? How much of it is personnel? There are personnel issues on the defensive side of the ball.
Short and sweet answer for you, Sage. I know you like him short and sweet. Also, Bruce Arians, as we record this, has retired.
Okay.
Lions have fired their offensive line coach and their assistant head coach, but the head coach is still in play.
Caldwell's still there. Okay.
Arians resigned or retired?
Announced his retirement.
Okay.
John Fox is out. So a lot of stuff going on. Anyway.
Back to Mike.
Simple answer. No sacks from Quan Alexander and Levante David. The Bucs suddenly became arguably the worst blitzing team in the NFL. That's on Mike Smith. Sorry, that is on Mike Smith. Now, the talent that forces you to blitz, that's on Jason Light and his failed attempt to build a defensive line. As far as the cornerback depth, that's not on Mike Smith. He's not out there picking cornerbacks. What's the guy going to do? He's stuck with Hargraves. Hargrave was so bad they had to bench him. Kudos to Mike Smith for bringing in his guy, Robert McClain, off the street, who actually had a decent season, who played pretty well. He's not a starter in this league.
He didn't embarrass himself.
But he didn't embarrass himself at all. And
the fact remains that the 32nd on defense, and he's ahead of the defense.
I got two elements. One, I'm going to revert to something Steve said earlier about, hey, be bold, see what you can get for DeSean Jackson. Maybe you can get a number three corner. Well, the way Hargraves fell off the map, that tells me one or two things. Either something's going on off the field or someone screwed him up on the coaching staff. So what Steve said earlier about potentially getting number three corner, what kind of confidence you have if that the guy could be developed? I don't know. I mean, has Ryan Smith been developed?
I understand.
So I got some issues about that, but I'm a broken record about this. And I think any reasonable football fan, much less Bucks fan, if I said, I'm going to give you three defensive linemen, one tackle and two ends in one group, Group A. Group B, I'm going to give you two defensive ends and a defensive tackle. Group A will be Ghost Johnson, Daquan Bowers, late-hitting Akeem Spence. Group B would be Robert Ayers, Will Golston, Swaggy Baker. Which group would you pick?
You would probably pick Group B.
Yes. Group A, inept Lovie Smith squeezed 8.5 sacks out of those guys in 2014. Somehow got 8.5 sacks. Group B, who we both agree, better, 2.5 sacks. That's $19 million of Team Glazer money flushed
down. Steve, as we sit here on the Tuesday podcast, I don't know if Mike Smith's coming back. I still don't know.
I do.
Can I get an answer?
I think he's
Steve has
back.
An answer.
I think he's coming back. I think Dirk made that clear. He said he's coming back for now unless things change.
Well, what does that mean?
It means he's coming back unless
Team Glazer
gets
says
another.
No.
I think he was – look, Dirk Cutter loves Mike Smith. Believes in him. The defense just played well 2 weeks in a row. It's about points on the board. They let up what 17 points to the Saints.
But overall, guys, in 2017,
fourth quarter defense,
Steve,
is pathetic.
Mike Smith did not pad his resume.
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about Dirk Cutter. Okay, Dirk Cutter.
He is loyal to a fault.
He's loyal, And
we see that with Doug
Martin.
Bucks
defense just rebounded the last couple of weeks. They're feeling good about the defense. He doesn't blame Mike Smith for the personnel issues. I don't think Dirk Cutter thinks, oh, well, I'll find somebody better. I think he sees Mike Smith as, this guy was a two-time NFL Coach of the Year. Let's. I hope he gets his gig.
John Fox is a two-time Coach of the Year, wasn't he?
Is Jason Light in a habit of acknowledging we have personnel issues and I'm not going to blame Mike Smith? How does the GM look at it?
Well, the GM's been silent, so he doesn't do that. I do have actually quotes from him on the Buccaneers Radio Network yesterday, which are interesting, but I don't remember them.
For another
but nobody
podcast.
Else has them, so they'll be on Joe Buck's Fan Doc. Nobody else will have them. Look, the Mike Smith situation, I think part of this is off his hands because he was forced. I think it's fair to say, you know how this league works, Sage. Maybe you could tell the audience. You know that Mike Smith was forced to play Swaggy Baker early in this season as a starter, whether he liked it or not.
He was outplayed by Clinton McDonald
all season. Yes.
All season.
But they didn't bench Swaggy, and he wasn't producing. But the head coach picks the starting lineup. The GM signs the big free agent, and he's got to play. You know how that goes.
Yep. No doubt about it.
Yeah, my issue with Smith, to be fair, hell of a linebackers coach. Quan Alexander and Beckwith, they eat out of his hand. They love him. And look, the linebackers
are not effective as blitzers.
But defense as a whole, no. And there's no way you can argue that. I always, as I stated earlier, you know, who's the improved outside linebackers? Who has improved? Gerald McCoy's always been Gerald McCoy, which is good. He's a good player. I know the blind haters will freak out hearing that. Sorry.
And Quan was good as a rookie before Smith got here.
Yeah. I mean, who is the improved? I guess you could make an argument, and same with Brent Grimes. Brent Grimes is Brent Grimes. I guess you could argue Justin Evans has come along.
You could say Justin Evans came
along. But that's kind of a reach, because if you look overall, I mean, Ayers hasn't gotten better. Golson got worse. Swaggy sure as hell didn't get better. I read that he had 9 snaps Sunday night. Yeah. 9 snaps. So really, no one's outside of potentially Justin Evans, no one's gotten better.
Fair point. Steve, one thing we haven't mentioned.
Yes, please.
Steve, just quick. Cutter, the subject came up about the play calling. And Cutter, instead of being vague like he is with, Mike Smith, he was exclamatory. Gentlemen, I don't want to misquote Dirk Cutter, God forbid, because I'll hear about it. But did he say basically, ain't going to happen? Ain't going to happen? Not a chance? And you know what? I think I'm okay with that because
I'm not anti that.
Because why is Dirk Cutter here? Why did Dirk Cutter get that job?
Jameis.
Part of it is Jameis.
I think all of it.
Part of it is play calling. Steve, if he gives up the play calling, I think that's going to hurt his stature going forward. And he thinks he's a heck of a play caller, and he made a heck of a reputation as a play caller. But the three of us have news for Dirk Cutter. This offense hasn't been very good for the last 2 years.
Yeah, maybe play calling is not the right. Steve and I talked about this off the podcast that, you know, fans say play calling. It may be style. And I stated this earlier in this very podcast. Think he needs to be more aggressive inside the 30. You know, obviously, the red zone offense is not that good. Last night, again, we saw he was going to go for a field goal, which not exactly dumb given the circumstances. But James, hell with this. I'm going for gusto. And look what happened.
20 points a game, it's not going to cut it, Steve, going forward. 20 points a game.
Not unless you have a sap-like defense.
It's not good enough.
No, look, he said it. I'm the play caller, and that's it. So I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, everybody likes to assume Todd Monken would be better.
Yes.
Calling Dirk Cutter's offense, not Todd Monken's offense. And people make a lot of assumptions about all that.
Well, I mean, the assumption is fair because when he was in college, Monken's offenses shined.
Sure.
Oklahoma State, for example, I think they had record-setting
team's got to score more touchdowns.
Sure, but Monken still has a lot of input now into the game plan. I mean, that's why Dirk Cutter has said, you know, that's a big reason why he's here is because he's such a game planner. And so I don't think it would be radically different under Monken radically, but obviously it might be better. I mean, we're talking about the key plays that make a difference between 20 points and 24 points a game and victories, but it's over. Sage, fans are looking for your wisdom on what the hell happened Friday with Dirk Cutter getting told he's coming back, John Gruden not here, then we hear reports, Bucks never talked to Gruden, and what do you make of all this mess, the reality?
I'll give you my overview here, Lee, and I think it's fairly simply laid out. By Friday, Oakland had emerged as a major player. Talking to Gruden's agent. Nobody talks to Gruden directly. Everything goes through Gruden's agent, as it should be. And Gruden's agent operating from a position of tremendous strength, tremendous leverage. Man's got a great job. Wasn't like ESPN didn't want Gruden back. That's a big factor. He's got that job. He's operating from strength. Here comes Oakland. Mark Davis, Al's son. And in the discussions with the agent, it's basically the agent gets the impression, whatever you guys want, let's make this happen. Whatever you want. Well, when he gets back to the Glazers and basically says, we have other options and concrete option in Oakland, and they're willing to do this and do this and do this. And I think it reached a point where the Glazers, talking amongst themselves, the co-chairman, said, we can't go that far. We're not willing to go that far. Stake in a team, $10 million, total authority. We can't do it. It doesn't make any sense. So God bless John. Good luck. And at that point, they reached the same conclusion that I wrote 10 days ago. If you can't get Gruden, give Cutter another chance.
I don't know if people realize what
And by the way, Lee, and I hope you agree with me on this, to suggest, to even suggest that the Bucks had no interest in John Gruden coming back to one Buck Place, how naive can you be?
That's baloney.
The fans are not going to believe nor should they.
I think I wrote that night when that came out, it smelled like a Florida outhouse in July.
Steve, that's what you want to put out there. When you finish second, when you go at bat and you strike out. And I don't blame the Glazers for striking out. I'm not saying the Glazers should have matched Oakland's offer.
Well, I don't know if people realize that the pot of gold a chunk of a team is. Just 1%. Just 1% of the Raiders, if you go by Forbes' estimation what the Raiders are worth, $23 million. Just right off the bat, $23 million. And that's going to rise when they go to Vegas, of course. And again, I'm just talking 1%. Hell, we don't even know. It could be 10%. We don't know. But if it's 1%, that means Chucky's going to get 1% of the gross revenue that the Raiders get. And I say this again, although Steve goes bananas with me about attendance. When I see an owner file for food stamps because he doesn't have enough people in the seats, or has to file for bankruptcy, then I'll believe that they're losing money.
So what's wrong with my scenario from Friday?
No, it's perfect. It's absolutely correct. But what I'm talking about, if you're the Glazers, you know, you got to be. Here's another thing to think about: getting a chunk of the team, which Chucky may. I understand it has to go through NFL ownership, and that might be rocky. Mark Davis has no heirs. If he dies, it goes, I guess, what, a trust fund? So I would assume that if Chucky's going to get a piece of the team, if his agent knows what the hell's going on, he might get first right to come up with an ownership group to take over the team, which is like billionaires' money.
Steve, the key is that Gruden had all the leverage. Gruden had all the leverage, and the Glazers didn't have the leverage because other teams were interested in him. And here came up. All it takes is one other team, right?
Yeah,
just like in free agency. One other team to set the bar for Calais Campbell. Here comes Jacksonville. No, I'm serious. Takes one other team. And here came the Raiders and with an open checkbook. What do you need, John? What do you need? I don't blame the Glazers for not matching it.
I got a question for you, Ira. You know who – we all know who represents Gruden. He also represents Light. He also represents Jack Del Rio.
He does.
Now, how dicey is that for an agent?
Very, very dicey. Very
that almost looks like it was
what's this guy supposed to tell Del Rio? I mean, that's just crazy.
It almost sounds like Del Rio was thrown under the bus on purpose.
I hear you, but Del Rio won 6 games with a good team. It's just, you know, the NFL's a tough business. I think, Ira, the biggest reason, I agree with everything you said for the most part.
Wow, let's put a headline on that one, Lee.
This Dayton podcast history.
For the most part.
For the most part. The Glazers are business people, right? That's what they are first, okay? They're not ex-jocks. They're business people. So, you know what? There's no possible reason in the world why a good businessman wouldn't go, or even a bad business person wouldn't say, yeah, John, what are you looking for? It doesn't cost them anything. And then it also lets them know a benchmark for next year if he's still out there and they're interested. So why would you not ask? It doesn't make any logical sense, especially since the guy isn't even killing any rumors anywhere. So, I mean, it's...
The problem is, I'm not sure Oakland's doing this as a business decision. This guy just seems infatuated with the idea of Chucky coming back to the other Bay Area. And I'm not sure it's good business from an Oakland standpoint.
It's dumb business to give away a piece of your equity for a coach that you could find just, you know, who thought McVay was going to be? I mean, that's the example.
This is not a cool, calculated business decision from Oakland's standpoint.
I think it's both. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, yeah, they need.
The buzz.
They need juice to sell all the big money stuff.
Going to Vegas.
Yeah. Number two, I would guess.
But give away a chunk of the team? You couldn't find another coach to have buzz?
No. Well, Gruden stands alone.
Gruden stands alone with the Raiders fans as well.
Oh, I know they worship him out
there. In general. But also, I'm sure, I would really guarantee it, frankly, if he does get ownership, they're probably going to buy, included in that's going to be all his marketing rights as an owner and as a Raider and all kinds of stuff that are just all business related. If he has that ownership, it's going to include all kinds of stuff that he's got to do outside of being a coach. It's the only thing that would make sense.
I think that's an important point, Lee, is that if it happens with Gruden and Oakland, and look, if Adam Schefter of ESPN's reporting it, and he gets this wrong, he's going to look like a clown.
Well,
so let's assume it happens in a week. Okay. Let's assume. I think the lesson to be learned is don't pile on Bucks ownership for swinging and missing.
Not at all.
Because this was a very unique situation where Mark Davis was not going to be outbid. Whatever you want, you're going to get. And I don't think that's good business, so I don't blame the Glazers for not partaking.
Basically, what you're saying is Mark Davis pulled a Vito Corleone.
He definitely made him an offer he can't refuse.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's always a chance with Chucky that it doesn't happen.
Well, you're going to get back to something that it sticks in my craw.
There you go.
All these rumors flying all over creation about Chucky and the Bucks. They had Monday Night Football here.
Ring of Honor.
All that, bring back Gruden, all this stuff. Not once did those frauds at ESPN have anything about Chucky and the Bucks. Never asked him, never talked about it, never discussed it, even though it was all over the place, NFL Network's talking about it. But all of a sudden, the Raiders, now they're real chatty.
Absolutely.
What gives? Is that only because the Raiders are a much more popular team than the Bucks?
I think ESPN realized that they gave up the ghost. It's over. He's not coming back, and they want him back, but he's not coming back.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. They don't say boo when the Bucks have all this stuff's flowing, and then all of a sudden the Raiders, hey, it's big news, Mort and the Schefter are on the scene.
I'm starting to think it's because of the Raiders' popularity.
It could be.
They're in a business for eyeballs. They don't get eyeballs for the Bucks. They do with the Raiders.
I think that's part of it, but I think mostly, like Ira said, I think they know it's too late.
Yeah, probably the agent probably confirmed it to them this is going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like Arthur Blank essentially gave Mark Dunn a great deal for a little piece of the team to make him a community ambassador. I mean, it's been done before.
Yeah, Steelers have done it with John Stallworth. Yeah.
So that's the kind of deal Elizabeth is looking for over here at $1. He wants a little piece.
Yeah, what the hell's going on?
You'll
here,
take Sage? A piece of Manchester United at this
Come
point,
on, Joel.
Yeah, exactly. How about these chairs? They got to be worth a couple $100. All right, Sage.
We're gonna have another podcast.
Your podcast,
this week,
of course, continues to roll Tuesday and Thursday. We have so much to get to out of all these little nuances of our locker room chats today.
You tried to set up a little thing with one of the Buck players for a podcast.
Yeah, we're going to have at least one Buccaneer on the podcast as we roll toward free agency. And I'll leave it with this, Sage. Do you have a message? We're going to close on your message. Do you have a message for Bucks fans in the face of 5-11? A lot of disappointment in not getting Gruden for some people. 5-11, Jameis, being a feast or famine quarterback has got people seeing the highs and the lows. And the state of the Bucks. What's your message?
I have a message. And I'm going to go right to Dirk Cutter on this one. Whatever you feel about Dirk Cutter, he's a realist. He's not naive. He's been around a long time. He's waited for his shot. Nobody has to tell Dirk Cutter. Nobody. Not Javier. Not you. Not Isbitz or me.
Commish.
Nobody has to tell Dirk Cutter how hot the seat's going to be in 2018.
It's going to
be toasty. And he knows that. So a year from now, if we're looking at 7-9, or I dare say
he's
even 8-8.
He's not here.
There's going to be a change at one point.
Yeah, he's not doing a post postseason wrap up.
And I think he'd understand it. He'd understand it. He's, you know.
He kind of talked about that today, didn't he? When he talked again about the courage of the Glazers keeping him.
He saw what happened on Black Monday around the
NFL. Talked about that.
You know.
Yeah, he talked about all the guys are losing their jobs.
You know, Del Rio, I believe, was two games over 500 in his 3 years with Oakland. Oakland was terrible when he got there. Terrible.
Awful, yeah.
And, you know, Jack Del Rio is looking for a job this week. So, it's going to be a very, very hot seat for Dirk Cutter. Doesn't mean he can't handle it. Doesn't mean he won't be able to get the job done. But I would say it's playoffs or else.
Oh, you would?
I would say it's playoffs.
If they finish 9-7 like last year, he's gone still?
9-9. Come on. How many years are we going to extend this drought? Speaking of drought, we're going to talk more about that on a future podcast.
Yeah, it's going to be.
The Buffalo Bills just ended a 17-year drought. That leaves the Browns and the Bucks right behind them.
Cleveland South.
Get out of here, Sage. And, of course, Lee and I, we don't agree with you on this Cutter hot seat stuff, but there Thursday we'll kick it off with that. How about that?
There you go, baby.